This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Forged in Shadow by Anna Carvin. Narrated by Jillian Macy. Chapter 1. Sergeant Erin Varga resisted the temptation to adjust her collar as she sat in the witness stand. Her formal military suit was stiff and uncomfortable, and she thanked the stars she only had to wear the damn thing once every few years. She'd never expected she would have to dust it off to front up to a Senate committee, and she'd been surprised to find it tight at the shoulders, but a little loose around her waist and ass. A couple of years patrolling a gigantic mining station on substandard space rations could do that to a body.
Sergeant Varga, do you understand that you are under truth monitoring and that you are under oath for the purposes of this interview?
I understand. A monitoring cap covered her cropped hair, capturing her brainwaves. To her left, a hollow screen displayed her neural signals as indecipherable colored squiggles. Its complex neural analysis algorithms would reveal even the slightest hint of a lie. It was standard procedure, and it didn't bother Erin. She had nothing to hide.
Could you please state your full name, rank, and station for the committee?
Her questioner was a stern woman with short gunmetal gray hair, called Senator Monroe. A few years ago, Monroe had headed some big investigation into human-alien relations. Back then, the senator had been skeptical about opening Earth's borders to non-humans. Erin straightened and gazed across the room, making eye contact with each member of the committee. Sergeant Erin Varga, Peacekeeper, Division Morgan 5, formerly assigned to protection duty of the Armium Mining and Processing Station, Fortuna Tau. Beside her, thin blue lines ran across the monitor.
Thank you, Sergeant Varga.
The senator stood, walking slowly across the floor until she reached the stand. The committee was made up of 5 senators who sat in a semicircle facing Erin. The gallery behind them was filled with their support staff and the representatives of various Federation agencies. Of course, they all had the proper security clearances. Whatever Erin said wouldn't go beyond these walls.
Welcome back to Earth, Varga.
It was her first day back on sweet Earth soil, and already she'd been hauled before this pain-in-the-ass committee. But that was all part of the plan. She had a job to do. Erin schooled her features into a blank mask, careful not to betray any sign of her impatience.
Go planetside and explain the situation to your leaders in terms they understand. Don't take too long. The Zargek are multiplying as we speak. Your entire planet is at stake now, Erin.
Monroe looked down at a data pad, going over her notes.
We've heard from a number of experts on this matter, but I wanted to get your input on a few specific points, especially since you're the only peacekeeper who's actually been allowed off the Hendrix, too.
The senator regarded Erin with a steely gaze, raising a questioning eyebrow. Her tone was skeptical.
It seems you were close to the action, as they say.
Unruffled, Erin returned Monroe's stare. She refused to be intimidated.
Sergeant, some alarming footage has been passed on to us. We've all heard rumors about the Zargek, but this is the first time we've gained direct vision of their offensive capabilities. They are clearly a threat to Earth and to the human race. You are one of the few peacekeepers with first-hand combat experience against these monsters. For that reason, I will ask you, how do we kill them?
Erin gave the senator a long, hard look, choosing her words carefully.
For that,
You need a Cordolian.
Murmurs rippled through the audience. Monroe's eyes narrowed. She obviously didn't like Aaron's answer.
Do you care to clarify that statement, Sergeant?
It's exactly as I said. Only the Cordolians have the capacity to take down a mature Zargak.
I find it hard to believe you couldn't eliminate any of the enemy up there, Varga.
Aaron shrugged. We killed a few larvae.
A few larvae, Monroe stated flatly. Were you on vacation up there, soldier?
Vacation? Aaron stiffened. I don't think the families of the men and women killed by those monsters would agree with that sentiment, Senator.
Monroe opened her mouth, then closed it again, shooting Aaron a frosty glare. Tell me about the Cordolians, she said, changing the subject. Not one, but two hostile species have appeared in Earth's orbit during the past week. The Cordolians have captured the super freighter Hendrix II, and we don't know what they want. There have been reports of Zargek attacks in the deserts around Nyaia. Now, you're telling me only the Cordolians can kill the Zargek?
Tell me, Sergeant.
What makes them so special? What makes you think only they have the capacity to kill Zargek when we have equipped you with the most advanced offensive weaponry in the Federation?
A sarcastic answer found its way to the tip of Aaron's tongue, but she bit it back. She reminded herself that she was sitting before a Senate committee, not idling in the grease pits with her squad. She had to try and act civilized.
Cordolians are super-evolved beings, she answered, keeping her tone neutral. The Zargak are impervious to bolt-powered weapons and any other incendiary substance known to man. The only thing I've seen successfully penetrate their exoskeletons is a Kalidom blade. And the only being possessing the speed, power, aggression, technology, and experience needed to take on a fully grown Zargak is a Cordolian warrior. As much as we love our bolt weapons, Senator, we have nothing on the Cordolians.
We might not like to hear it, but there's a reason they're holding half the known galaxies hostage.
Beside her, the truth monitor flickered blue and green. Aaron was cool, calm, and collected. And she was telling the honest to Jupiter truth.
So it seems, Monroe said dryly.
She studied her data pad for a moment, allowing the silence to stretch between them. A few awkward coughs and shuffles punctuated the stillness. Aaron tried to ignore the uncomfortable sensation spreading across her lower back. Sitting still for long periods of time didn't agree with her. She needed to be up and about, moving, doing something. This pointless interrogation was starting to make her edgy. Finally, the senator looked up.
The way you describe these Cordolians, one might almost think you don't regard them as enemies. How would you describe your interaction with these aliens, Sergeant?
Frisky? That was the first word that popped into her head as she recalled the infuriating Cordolian called Rickle. Aaron quickly tried to scrub such thoughts from her mind.
We had an agreement, Aaron said bluntly. They needed something from us, and we needed something from them. I would say our relationship was one of necessity. If we'd made the mistake of engaging them in a fight, I doubt I'd be sitting here and talking to you right now.
Rickle. He'd been an asshole at first. He'd taken her hostage, using a quick and dirty tactic to secure their cooperation. She remembered the feel of his rough-gloved hands on her throat. His naked Kalidom blade had been pressed against the bare skin of her neck, and for a moment, Aaron had known nothing but fear. He'd moved so damn fast. If Aaron or any of her squad had been stupid enough to retaliate, would he have slit her throat? In the end, he hadn't put a scratch on her. And afterwards, when the Cordolians had ensured they were all spooked enough not to try anything, he'd changed, turning from aggressor to protector by default. Default. They shared a common enemy, that was all.
I can assure you, Senator, Aaron added, there is no way I consider the Cordolians to be our allies.
That damned Rickle. He'd seemed to find every possible excuse to appear around her. It was almost as if he'd enjoyed sneaking up on her. As red lines flickered across the truth monitor, a smug expression crossed Senator Monroe's face.
There seems to be a discrepancy in what you're saying, Sergeant. Do you care to rephrase your last statement?
Are you implying that I'm being untruthful?
The monitor doesn't lie.
I don't see a falsehood notification on the monitor, Aaron retorted. She knew how this shit worked. She'd watched her share of crappy courtroom dramas on the netcom.
If the monitor detected a lie, an alert signal would flash across the holoscreen. The senator was just trying cheap intimidation tactics on her.
She's right, Senator Monroe.
One of the other committee members, a dignified-looking man called Senator Aquinas, looked up from his notes.
You know very well that not all readings in the amber to red range signify deception. Quite frankly, your line of questioning is starting to resemble a prosecution. Senator Varga is here because she was witness to a hostile takeover, not because she's committed a crime. I've heard several analyses of this incident, and personally, I think her actions should be commended.
He looked down at his datapad, a small sigh escaping him.
It's going to be a long day. We have quite a list of interviews to get through. I suggest we adjourn for a quick recess before continuing with the day's proceedings.
He glanced across at his fellow committee members.
Any objections?
There were none. Monroe shot Aquinas a frosty glare, and some sort of silent communication passed between them. Clearly, these two weren't friends.
Serves you right, Dragon Lady, Aaron thought.
The woman wasn't handling the truth well. Cordolians were physically superior. That was just the way things were. Sooner or later, the human race had to accept the fact that they weren't at the top of the universal food chain. As people began to file out of the chambers, the truth monitor flashed blue and green, much to Aaron's relief. The red signals had surprised her.
What was that all about?
She liked to think she had pretty good control over her inner thoughts and emotions. But, deep down, she knew what had happened. Rickle had invaded her thoughts. Again. That alien was pure trouble, wrapped up in an impenetrable obsidian exo-armor. He'd found every excuse to appear at the most inconvenient of times, turning up to boss her around, or ask some obscure question. Aaron had tried to ignore him, but it had been oh so difficult. How was one supposed to ignore an over-familiar alien who could be playfully gentle with one hand and deal swift, silent death with the other? He was impossible. The smoldering amber glances, the way he'd accidentally brushed against her, the insolent flash of his fangs. He had no understanding of the concept of personal space. He was still causing her trouble, and he wasn't even here. He was somewhere up in low Earth orbit on a hijacked super freighter, probably terrorizing the crew and the passengers. After this interrogation was over, she had to get back up there. Her people were up there, and she knew how to handle the Cordolians. These Federation guys didn't. They would screw everything up. The monitor started to flash orange and red. Exasperated, Aaron ripped off the monitoring cap, before her thoughts could betray her any further. The warden of the chambers stepped up to the stand, giving Aaron a strange look.
"Happens all the time," he said flatly. "Red and orange are just colors, emotions. It's the pattern that counts. You ain't lying unless the machine's neural analysis says so."
He pressed a button, releasing the sliding gate.
"Take a break, Sergeant. Go smoke a juvie stick or something. Relax. You ain't off the hook yet. They'll all want to put the hard talk on you. Trick is to stay calm and figure out what they want. They've all got their own agendas. Use that to your advantage."
"Huh." Aaron stepped out of the booth, grateful for the chance to stretch her legs. The warden was right. She would be back in the stand after the recess, and she needed to regain her composure. She had to try and keep her thoughts away from Rickle.
"Focus, Varga, you idiot."
Somehow, she had to convince these civilians that humankind's only hope of defeating the Zargek lay in cooperating with the Cordolians. But what happened when every last Zargek was dead and the Cordolian general returned to retrieve his men? Would Rickle act so friendly then? Or would he once again become the cold, brutal warrior who hadn't hesitated to hold a knife to her throat?
Chapter 2. Rickle missed his Ashika. He secretly called her that because she reminded him of one. Ashika. Iceblade. Sharp, direct, and effective. Without her level-headed guidance, the humans were starting to become panicky again. An Ashika was a special type of blade. The Ikun used them to hack through the thick ice sheets of the Vol, creating portals to the frigid ocean below so they could hunt the eyeless creatures in the depths. Rickle wasn't really sure how he knew that, but he did. Fragments of stolen memories surfaced every now and then, vivid and baffling and intense. It happened to all of them, but for some reason, Rickle experienced flashbacks more frequently than the others. He munched on a bar of protein mix as he surveyed the cargo hold. The craft they'd escaped on was a large, bulky thing the humans referred to as a super freighter, and it had been their ticket off the doomed mining station. Rickle went still, extending his senses. Except for the ever-present background hum of the ship's engine, all was silent. He listened carefully for the telltale skittering of Zargek larvae, but there was nothing. He peered into the darkness, scanning rows of empty cargo containers. Before they'd escaped Fortuna Tau, the containers had been full of crudely processed armium metal. They'd ordered the humans to dump as much of the payload as possible. Less weight equaled greater speed. Rickle's hand rested lightly on the hilt of his sword. In close quarters, stealth and speed were king. The best way to clear out a Zargek nest was to stalk, stab, impale, and sever. In silence. In darkness. That was what they did best, and it was why they were feared throughout the nine galaxies. Most of the time, their enemies died before they knew what had hit them. As Rickle crept forward, soft sounds tickled his sensitive hearing. Whispered words reached his ears, uttered in indecipherable human speak. Then, footsteps, rustling fabric, the scrape of clumsy limbs against hard armor, minute metallic creaks as unsteady fingers clutched ungainly weapons. An ironic smile twisted Rickle's lips. Someone was trying to hunt him. Humans, they were eternally optimistic. He moved silently down the aisle, drawing his dagger. He could smell them now. Humans gave off a distinct scent, especially when they were afraid. The coarse rasp of his breathing betrayed the first human,
who was just around the corner from him. Rickle waited in the darkness. The human shuffled into his line of vision, his bolt gun raised. He wore a pair of goggles with glowing green lenses. He looked around, snapping his head left and right. His breathing was labored, and a faint sheen of moisture coated his cheeks. He had no idea that Rickle was behind him. Rickle took a step forward, placing the tip of his dagger against the back of the human's neck, ensuring he applied just enough pressure to make his intent clear. "What are you doing, human?" His voice was low and soft, and threaded with a dangerous undercurrent. He spoke universal, the language developed and spread by the Empire. Like all societies that aspired to trade throughout the nine galaxies, humans had adopted universal, molding it to suit their strange, lilting accents.
"You're outnumbered, alien," the human hissed. "Drop your weapon, and we might let you live."
"Are you dense, man?" Rickle shook his head. "Don't be foolish." It wasn't his habit to give the enemy a friendly warning, but he'd grown strangely fond of these funny, soft-bodied creatures called humans. They were irrational and sentimental, and they allowed their actions to be guided by their emotions. It was somehow endearing.
"Don't get too full of yourself, alien," hissed the human. "There's only one of you, and there are many of us. Too many for you to take down on your own."
"You really think so?" Rickle inclined his head in the darkness before he froze, listening.
"Shh,"
he whispered, digging the tip of the dagger into the human's skin with dangerous precision. Just a little more, just deep enough to draw a spot of blood. The human hissed in pain. If human anatomy was anything like his own, the man's spinal cord would be easily accessible through gaps between his bony vertebrae. In many ways, humans looked quite similar to Cordolians. As he tracked the tiny noises echoing around the hold, Rickle's thoughts once again drifted to her. Erin, his favorite human. Exactly how similar was their anatomy? Kyene's hells. He wished it were Erin he was getting close to, instead of this idiotic peacekeeper who stank of fear. How had these humans obtained weapons anyway? Rickle thought all of their weapons had been seized. Apparently not. They must have kept a secret stash somewhere. The freighter was a large craft, after all. Too big for them to check every nook and cranny. Not that it mattered. Weapons or not, the outcome would be the same. The human began to move, but Rickle placed a hand on his throat. "Don't," he murmured. The human froze. Rickle's senses were stretched taut, demanding absolute concentration. His ears twitched as he listened, searching for variations in the silence. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He mouthed the words silently in Cordolian, counting the footsteps, reading the patterns, detecting subtle differences in scent. "There are 6 or 7 of them," he said softly, "including you."
"How?"
"Shh," Rickle repeated. "If I have to tell you to be quiet again, you're dead." He flipped his dagger, turning it so the blade was facing towards him. He slammed the hilt of the dagger into the human's skull, sending him crashing to the floor. The human slumped into an awkward pile of armor, weapons, and limbs. "Better yet, sleep for a while." The human had been a pain in the ass, but he'd also been a valuable source of information. The only reason Rickle hadn't killed him was because of a promise he'd made to Erin. "Fine," she'd grumbled. "I'll do as you ask and go down to Novaterra, but only if you promise not to harm any of my people while I'm gone." Rickle was a killer, but he didn't break promises. That would be dishonorable. That's why he rarely ever made promises.
I'm not going to make any promises I can't keep, but I'll try my best not to harm them, he answered honestly. Although it depends on whether they can behave themselves.
A sharp buzz diverted his attention, bringing him back to the present. There was a small comm device in the unconscious human's ear. Someone was babbling in human speak. Rickle carefully extracted the comm from the man's ear, untangling the crude speaking piece from his collar.
I'm coming for you, he said, speaking into the comm. If you give up now, I might let you live.
The response was a few sharply uttered human words that sounded like cursing amidst crackling static. Rickle sighed. Why did these humans have to become difficult all of a sudden? When Aaron was here, they'd been disciplined and sensible. But now, this rabble of humans seemed to fancy their chances against him. Rickle was about to show them how misguided they were. He had to act fast. There were thousands of humans on board this freighter, including 50-odd peacekeepers. There were 6 Cordolians. The humans had to be kept in a state of fear. It was the only way to keep them controlled. So far, the humans had been too afraid of them to try and take them on. But it was only a matter of time before someone got cocky and stupid and decided he or she could start a revolution. Point in case. 2 more humans approached him. They were spooked now, judging from the way they walked, their steps shuffling and hesitant. Humans were so awkward and clumsy, just like children. Rickle sheathed his dagger and issued a mental command, summoning the virus-impregnated nanoparticles that dwelled in his bloodstream. They were reinforced with Kalidom, and when they coalesced over his body, they formed an impenetrable barrier. Rickle's body was already protected by his hard yet flexible suit of exo-armor, but he'd left his face bare. Now he summoned his helm, welcoming the familiar burn as the subcellular particles swarmed through bone and tissue and skin. They could try to punch him, stab him, shoot him, burn him, and impale him, but nothing would get through. Rickle began to run, heading towards the source of the sound. He left every one of his weapons sheathed or holstered. He didn't want to kill the damn humans unless it was absolutely necessary, so he would only use his hands. For a First Division warrior like Rickle, not killing was much harder than taking a life. It required restraint. And when it came to fighting, Rickle had never had any reason to show restraint. But now, he thought of Aaron, and for some reason, he wanted to please her. Like a swift shadow, Rickle descended on the humans, who were moving in some kind of back-to-back formation, their guns held before them, their green goggles glowing in the darkness. One of the humans had enough wits about him to fire off a shot of bolt energy. The white beam struck Rickle in the chest, but it didn't slow him down. His fist smashed into the human's face, sending him crashing to the floor. The second human whirled, cursing. Rickle's hands closed around his neck as the human tried to angle his gun towards Rickle's head.
"It won't work against me," Rickle grated,
as he tried to figure out how to put this one down. He settled for squeezing the points on the human's neck, where he presumed the large arteries ran. The human struggled for a bit, then slumped. As soon as his body went limp, Rickle released his grip. He didn't want to strangle the guy. Well, he did, for stupidity. But for now, this would do. There were 4 left. The next 3 were easy targets. All Rickle needed to do was punch, chop, elbow, and strangle. He dropped them all, sustaining only a few blasts from those irritating bolt weapons. The shots hurt like hell as his armor absorbed them, but they didn't cause any permanent damage. The last human had managed to climb onto one of the cargo containers. The empty metal cargo shells sat in a long, interconnected row. They were about 1.5 times Rickle's height, and they were arranged on metal tracks. This human had a larger weapon, some kind of tubular launcher thing that he hefted over one shoulder.
"I can see you, fucker!"
he yelled, his universal clipped and awkward. A tiny red light flashed, and Rickle found himself the target of a missile.
"Take this!"
"Oh, come on," he groaned. Instinctively, his hand found its way to one of his throwing knives, and before he could think twice, the thing had flown out of his hand, hurled in the direction of the human. Rickle turned and tried to dodge, but the missile had some kind of tracking feature, and he couldn't lose it. So, he did the only thing he could. He crouched down into a ball as the missile hit him, knocking him to the ground. It exploded in a storm of fire and heat. Rickle's armor held firm, protecting him from the brunt of the blast. But some of the heat still managed to seep through, searing his skin. Rickle swore. It had been a while since he'd been caught in a firestorm like this. He'd forgotten how much this shit could hurt. As the fire died down, Rickle picked himself up, groaning as pain shot through his body. His skin felt as if it had been stretched taut and dipped into the boiling lava pits of Keldork. Every nerve ending was seared. The missile's fire hadn't killed him, but a small amount of its heat had penetrated through the flexible layer of his armor, superficially burning his skin. His exo-armor was impervious to most things. It could resist fire and plasma and bolt weapons. So whatever this human had just thrown at him must have been powerful stuff. Still, all he'd come away with were superficial burns. A nuisance, nothing more. Rickle grunted in pain as he rose to his full height, listening carefully for any signs of life. Silence. There were no more attackers. Groaning, he recalled the majority of his nanites into his body, wincing as they passed through cell and fiber and membrane. It hurt like a bitch. But he needed to heal. The nanoparticles would get to work now, repairing his damaged skin. It would be quick. Goddess knew he was a freak, a supreme aberration. They all were. Naked, apart from the thin straps that held his weapons in place, he jumped and grabbed hold of the top of one of the cargo containers, grunting with pain and exertion. His skin was covered with rapidly healing blisters, and every moment was excruciating. Rickle hauled himself to the top, landing on the roof in a crouching position. The human was a few steps away from him, flat on his back. Dead. Rickle's knife had hit him square between the eyes, splitting his green-lensed goggles in two. Sighing, Rickle limped over to where the human lay and retrieved his throwing knife. The goggles fell away, revealing a pale face dotted with small brown specks of pigment. A bush of reddish-colored hair covered the human's jawline and cheeks. Dark red blood trickled from a slit-shaped hole between the human's eyebrows, forming a stark line across his pale skin. Humans grew hair on their faces, and their blood smelled like the dry, metallic earth of some of the red dust planets they'd visited. They were such strange creatures. He hadn't meant to kill this one, but his hand had moved of its own volition. Certain things were hardwired into him, such as the need to kill everyone and everything that posed a threat to him. Aaron would probably be annoyed. But then this guy shouldn't have fired a Kyene-cursed missile at him in the first place. Rickle flicked the blood off his throwing knife and placed it in a small sheath close to his chest. Without the rest of his armor, the remaining structures holding his weapons in place appeared strange. The nanostructures depended so much on his ability to hold perfect visualizations of prototypes in his mind, even in the face of overwhelming pain. The Empire had made him into something other, even as they had taken everything else away from him. They'd stolen his memories and fractured his identity. They'd tried to take away his free will, too, but that hadn't exactly gone to plan. Rickles shook his head. There were 6 unconscious humans and 1 dead one in the cargo hold, and he had to figure out what to do with them. He looked at the dead human and made a decision. It wouldn't be pretty, but he needed to make an example of the humans who had tried to ambush him, so others wouldn't try and follow their lead. General Tarak had always said that fear could be more effective than the sharpest Kalidum blade. Rickle made a face and drew his long dagger, the one he used for stabbing and filleting and close-quarters blade work. It wouldn't be pretty, but he knew what he had to do. Erin would freak out when she heard, but he would just have to explain to her later that things weren't always as bad as they seemed. Chapter 3. When Erin finally escaped the Senate chambers, the sun was throwing long shadows across the forecourt. Her hand flew to her pocket, but then she remembered she hadn't smoked juvie in years. Smoking had been prohibited on Fortuna Tau, helping her to finally break the addiction. Stupid old habits. They always resurfaced when she was stressed. Erin tore off her formal navy blue jacket, which felt tight and constricting, and took a deep breath. She'd forgotten how sweet the salty sea air smelled. It refreshed and calmed her as she strode across the plaza, making her way towards the hover rail station. Nova Terra hadn't changed since she'd last been here. It was the same old sterile, pristine, boring, soulless place. It was a world in a bubble, far removed from the harsh realities of the universe. Its only saving grace was the fact that the azure ocean surrounded it on all sides, blessing it with the perfect, balmy tropical climate. On this tiny island, decisions were made that determined the fate of the human race. As she rode the escalator up to the platform, Erin became painfully aware of the discreet electronic eyes that watched her from every angle. Constant surveillance was a Federation thing. Everyone who lived here accepted the fact that their public movements were watched and monitored, but it was still an unnerving feeling. The South train pulled up as she approached the departure point. It was a sleek, noiseless vehicle made up of 5 cars. It followed a trackless route through the diplomatic zone and out to the southern tip of the island, where the peacekeeper barracks were situated. That niggling feeling that she was being watched and followed, it never went away. Erin took her seat and stared through the floor-to-ceiling windows as they sped away from the station, leaving the diplomatic zone behind. The hover train carved a route along artificial concrete cliffs and out to one side. The glittering ocean stretched beyond the horizon, azure and endless. By the time they reached the peacekeeper barracks, there were only military personnel left on the train. Some were in uniform, while others just had that look. They all got it after a while. There was a certain hardness about them that told of sleepless nights and intimate brushes with death. A faint buzz resonated through the cabin as they glided through the security checkpoint. The strange sensation told Erin their biological signatures were being logged as they passed on to the base. The hover train pulled into its final stop, Nova Terra South, the entry point to the largest peacekeeper barracks in the southern hemisphere. As Erin stepped off the train, she found herself flanked on both sides by a couple of government types in suits. They stared at her for a moment, studying her through dark data lenses. The man was short and stout, with a thick, jowly neck and thinning blonde hair. The woman towered over him, tall and angular, her dark hair cut into a neat bob.
"Can I help you?" Aaron asked coldly, as the hover train pulled away, creating a sucking vortex of wind that momentarily ruffled their clothes.
"Sergeant Varga," the woman said, as tiny lights flickered across her data lenses. No doubt they had access to every single bit of data the Federation had on her, from her shoe size to her favorite brand and the ice cream flavor she liked. Incidentally, that was pistachio chalk chip.
"We're from the Department of Planetary Security, Non-Human Affairs. We need to speak with you."
"I gathered that," Aaron said dryly, as she started to walk. Now and then, she'd see a familiar face and offer a sharp nod in greeting. She passed out of the station with the two officials trailing behind her, their synthetic shoes echoing loudly on the pavement.
"It would be best if we spoke somewhere private," the man added, as they reached a black bot car with darkly tinted windows.
The doors slid open as they approached, and he gestured inside.
"Let's ride."
Aaron stopped dead in her tracks. "You haven't even identified yourselves properly, and you expect me to just hop in? How do I know you are who you say you are?" The woman pulled out a data pad.
"Our names aren't important, but for convenience, you can call us E1 and E2. We have the highest level of clearance. Clearances beyond clearances. You have no idea. We have informed your CO, and he's aware. Even your mother's aware."
She recited the words in a tired monotone, as if she'd delivered the same speech 100 times before.
"See for yourself."
She activated the datapad's holographic display, and two biological signatures appeared. Aaron held her link band up to the signatures to verify them. It was no surprise that they checked out. One was from her commanding officer on Earth, Major Singh. The other was a very familiar, very irritating biosig. It belonged to her mother, General Allison Varga. Aaron stiffened. Not many knew that she and the general were related. Most people, including the squad under her command, thought their common surnames were just a coincidence, and she preferred to let them think that. "Orders were orders," Aaron sighed and nodded. "Fine," she slid into the car. That was the problem with returning to Earth. Everyone wanted a piece of her. She hadn't made contact with her family since she'd arrived. But, of course, her mother knew she was on the ground. Not that her mother was anywhere near Earth right now, but the general, bless her soul, always seemed to know what was going on, even if she couldn't summon the balls to break a fucking protocol and get her own daughter off a doomed mineral freighter. That was why Aaron preferred the relative freedom of space, even if it meant sharing a freighter with a group of rather scary and very dangerous aliens. There was less drama in space. She almost missed Rickle's easygoing nature. It sounded stupid, but when he wasn't killing Zargek, threatening humans, scaring the living shit out of them, or blatantly pursuing her, he was rather easy to get along with. He was chillingly, effortlessly lethal, and, at the same time, rather nice. Nice looking, too, in an unearthly kind of way. He was the prettiest one out of all of the Cordolian warriors, and that was no mean feat. They were all so exotic-looking, like characters out of some dark fairy tale. But Rickle was downright ethereal. Looks could be so deceiving. As the bot car pulled away from the curb, she stared back at the two agents, wishing she were back on Hendrix too, as crazy as that seemed. "So," she leaned forward, placing her elbows on her knees, her ceremonial jacket draped across her lap. "What do you nameless folks want to know, and what exactly do you want me to do?" The woman leaned forward as the man sat back in his seat, watching her through his data lenses. He was probably recording their conversation. The woman removed her data lenses, revealing cold gray eyes. These two were just like the agents Erin remembered from her childhood. They had the demeanor of people who dealt so deeply in secrets and lies that they lived in a distorted version of reality. As a child, she remembered sneaking out of her room late at night to eavesdrop on conversations she hadn't understood. They had always visited her mother late at night, interrupting her as she pored over countless classified documents, the smell of juvie and strong black coffee lingering in the air. And now, they'd come after her.
"Somehow, you've become a diplomatic asset, Sergeant Varga. That's what we've learned from our sources."
Erin raised an eyebrow, waiting for further explanation.
"We all know that war and conflict can create unlikely challenges, pushing us into roles and responsibilities we never thought we'd have to assume."
"Do you really know that, lady?" She didn't like the sound of that. Where were they going with this?
"Our sources tell us that you've become something of a bridge."
A bridge? Was this some sort of coded intelligence speak?
"Major Dimitriou's death on Fortuna Tau was regrettable. Our sources inform us that out of all the sergeants on the freighter, you've been the one to assume the most responsibility in his absence."
Erin sighed. The Major had been one of the first to fall victim to the Zargek on Fortuna Tau, leaving the peacekeepers without an off-planet CO. "I haven't done anything out of the ordinary," she shrugged. "Just what was necessary at the time."
"You've been able to negotiate with the Cordolians, and you've successfully been involved in a large-scale emergency evacuation. Now, they've sent you to Earth as part of the negotiation process. For whatever reason, the Cordolians seem to be able to work with you. They trust you."
"I did what anyone else in my situation would have done." Erin didn't think she'd done anything special. She'd just been in the right place at the right time. And for some reason, the Cordolians, particularly Rickle, had insisted she be the one to travel to Earth to convey their demands. The deal was simple. Allow the Cordolians safe passage to where the Zargek were, guarantee them impunity on Earth, and they would let the humans on the Hendrix II go. That deal was proving very difficult for the humans to accept, because, like half the known universe, they didn't trust the Cordolians one little bit.
"Earth is facing a major crisis, Sergeant. The appearance of Cordolians and the Zargek in our airspace is ominous. We need to make critical decisions fast, but the wrong decision could result in the loss of lives. That's why we need you."
"You need me," Erin stated flatly. "For what?"
"In the next few days, it's highly likely that the Senate will agree on a course of action. We've obtained footage from Fortuna Tau's data feed, and we've seen what the Cordolians are capable of. We need them to exterminate the Zargek, and right now, that seems to be their main objective anyway."
The woman's lips curved into a mirthless smile.
"But we need more information. What are their weaknesses? What are their true plans? Is Earth in their sights as a potential takeover planet? We need you to continue to work with them. But, at the same time, you will be gathering information for us."
"So you want me to be a spy?" Erin said dryly.
"It's not a request, Sergeant. It's an order. From the highest levels of the Federation."
"We need you to observe them and report back to us."
For the first time, the man spoke, his voice low and monotonous. He didn't remove his data lenses.
"Get close to them. If you can get us a biosample of their DNA, even better. We're going to use them to get rid of the Zargek, and then we're going to figure out how to get rid of them. In the long run, They're nothing but a threat to us.
Erin opened her mouth, thought twice, and closed it again. One didn't just get rid of Cordolians, or Zargek for that matter. Those weird, terrifying insectoid aliens had survived a nuclear explosion in the vacuum of space. Now they were on Earth, and if what Rickle had told her was true, they had the capacity to multiply like fucking cockroaches.
We'll set you up with an undetectable communication node for when you're on Earth, and a supercode for the satellite line on the freighter, the woman said. There's some basic intelligence training you'll have to do before you depart. I'll give you a DNA collection kit as well. We'll take anything you can get. Blood, hair, even skin cells. For now, you're what we call a bridge. But soon, you'll be one of our most valuable assets.
Erin didn't want to be an asset. She couldn't think of anything worse. But orders were orders, and she was a peacekeeper, first and foremost.
I won't do anything that puts my people at risk, and I won't do anything shady, she declared, as the bot car slowed. They had reached the block where her quarters were located.
I'm going to get them off that freighter at all costs. Rickle and the other Cordolians had told her that if the Federation allowed them smooth passage to Earth so they could hunt the Zargek, her people would be freed and returned to Earth. She wondered whether Cordolians were as good at keeping promises as they were at killing.
I'm sure you haven't forgotten the penalty for insubordination, Sergeant.
The female agent put on her data lenses as the car's door slid open. She dismissed Erin with a small tilt of her chin.
We know everything about your military history, Varga. Just make sure you do as we say, or you'll end up spending the next decade assigned to an even more remote mining station.
Erin didn't bother to tell the agents that she liked being in space. Chapter 4. Erin jolted awake, dragged out of her slumber by the incessant bleeping of her link band. After the agents had dropped her at her quarters, she'd stolen an indulgent hour of sleep. Space lag was a very real thing. She brought up the holodisplay, but she didn't recognize the caller. Unknown, it said. Orange light pierced the darkness of her room through a crack in the blinds. The sun was setting across the Pacific.
Varga, she snapped, half expecting the call to be from some Federation suit.
Sergeant, you gotta help us!
Static cracked through the line.
There was no hollow image of the caller, which was a bit strange.
Rihanna?
She recognized the voice.
What's going on? I thought the Federation put a network blackout on the Hendrix, too. Is everything all right, Private?
It's all gone to shit, her junior whispered, terror creeping into her voice. I'm calling you from a fixed satellite line in the communications room. That's why there's no picture. You gotta get us out of here, Sergeant Varga. They're going to kill us.
Rihanna's breathing was thick and heavy, betraying her rising panic.
I don't know what you have to do to convince those Federation suits to give the Cordolians what they want, but if this goes on for much longer, they're going to end up killing us all.
Take a deep breath, Private, Erin said slowly, and tell me now, what exactly is going on?
The peacekeeper paused, and Erin heard mutterings in the background. Rihanna cleared her throat. There was a plan, she whispered. Some of the guys found a weapon stash in the lower entry bay. They followed one of the Cordolians down into the cargo hold. They thought they could take him because he was on his own, and they'd all managed to get their hands on bolt guns and even an old-fashioned atomic EI rocket launcher.
Erin groaned, putting her head into her hands.
None of them returned, Rihanna continued in a flat voice. Except for Harris.
Harris?
It didn't surprise Erin that he was amongst those who'd tried to attack the Cordolians. She'd always had difficulty keeping him in line, and lately he seemed to have developed a bit of a spike addiction. The stimulant was making some of her soldiers a bit too aggressive, almost borderline delusional, even though the manufacturer claimed it had no side effects.
"Well, a part of Harris came back," Rihanna said, and there was something in her tone that sent a chill down Aaron's spine.
"What do you mean, Private? Spell it out."
"The Cordolian came back with Harris's severed head, threw it at our feet, and told us that if we tried anything like that again, we'd all end up like that. Then he walked out of there like it was no big deal, even though he'd just taken down 7 of our guys. They're fucking savages, Sergeant, and we're helpless against them. We need to get off this freighter. I don't care if they're good at killing Zargek. I want out. Why aren't the Federation sending a rescue crew already?"
Rihanna's words were becoming jumbled. She sounded as if she was on the verge of tears. Aaron went still, a horrible coldness seeping through her. Her people had been killed. 7 of them, if Rihanna was to be believed. But what had they expected? These were Cordolians, after all. Aaron cursed herself for being naive. She cursed herself for being delusional enough to think that the Cordolians might actually be reasonable. She cursed her men for going after a lone Cordolian warrior and thinking they could handle business. Delusional idiots. They'd all seen the way the Cordolians had fought the Zargek in the docking bay on Fortuna Tau. How was any human supposed to fight against that? She'd warned them not to go down that path. Stupid fucking idiots. And now they were dead. "Rihanna," she said, injecting gentleness into her voice, "I want you to take a deep breath and calm down. Think. The Cordolians took us off Fortuna Tau. They stopped the Zargek from annihilating us. They could have just left us there to die, but they didn't.
And now they're using our lives as a bargaining chip."
In a way, Rihanna was right. The situation was delicate and becoming more and more complicated by the day. There were close to 3,000 rescued souls being held hostage on the Hendrix II. And, thanks to a certain mechanic's bright idea to broadcast their plight to the world, everyone on Earth knew it. Before the network blackout had been enforced, the survivors on board the freighter had communicated with their friends, family, and contacts on Earth. The news had spread like wildfire. The public wanted the survivors of the Fortuna Tau disaster safely back on Earth. And so, the Federation wasn't going to try anything rash, like send in rescue crews, until they knew exactly what they were dealing with. "Rihanna," Aaron said gently, "hold tight. Harris and the others died because they attacked the Cordolians. Whatever you and the others do, don't make enemies of them. They won't hurt you if you leave them alone. I'll be back there as soon as I can."
"They seem to listen to you. I've seen it."
Rihanna was beginning to sound a little calmer. "I don't know about that." All Aaron had done was to try and read the situation and play her cards right. That meant not doing anything stupid, rash, or unpredictable in the presence of super-evolved killers, and keeping her soldiers in check. What had her people been thinking? 7 of them had proven to be no match for a lone Cordolian. "What did he look like?" Aaron asked quietly.
"What?"
"Harris's killer." She forced herself to say the words, facing the harsh reality. She was under no illusions as to what the Cordolians really were, even charming. "What did he look like?"
I don't know. They all looked the same to me. Silver skin, pale hair, black armor, armed to the teeth and mean as hell."
"Anything else?"
"Yellow eyes."
Rihanna's voice wavered. Aaron could almost picture her shuddering. the Cordolians had her private spooked. I think he was the one called Riz something.
Rickle. Erin dropped her head into